Thursday, and it's a new chapter for Indiana University football. The 30th coach in history has been named today, and what better timing? Do they know that you come on Thursdays? That works out really well.
I'm sure that's why it happened.
Zach Osterman, who has already made an emergency visit with us on Monday when Tom Allen was relieved of his duty Sunday afternoon, and you kind of set the standard for us. You kind of set the timeline. You kind of did all that, and nobody's had a better grip of this than you. So the beat writer for Indiana football, IndyStar.com, at Zach Osterman on the Twitterverse, X, is in the studio with us today. When was the last time you slept more than 3 hours? How does this work in your world? Is it really end-to-end full court stuff when this happens?
It is, and you know, it's a blessing and a curse. I think that it moves a lot more quickly now because everybody wants to have, you know, the portal window opens at the beginning of December or near the beginning of December, and so everybody wants to you know, be able to move quickly in that space, have their coach in place. And
the old days, they waited for bowl games to be over, right? Didn't it used to stretch out a little bit?
Sometimes.
It started shrinking as we got.
Yeah, I mean, well, also remember you had the December signing window, and so, like, that accelerated it some. But I think the big thing has been the portal, and that's why you've seen these openings have been, I mean, Mississippi State was filled very quickly. Texas A&M basically went through two coaches, you know, very quickly and still filled that job at a pretty rapid pace. Syracuse is already closed up. I get the sense, and I'm not, you know, I'm hardly an insider on this, but I get the sense Duke is kind of rounding the bend, and they only opened because Mike Elko left for Texas A&M. So everybody moves more quickly through these now, ultimately, than they used to, and the portal is the reason why. But I also think the apparatus has never been better for it to move fast. There's such a, you know, we're also comfortable now with Zoom interviews and virtual stuff. And if you get a search firms are as refined as certainly they've ever been. And so you get a search firm involved in some of the background vetting and all those kinds of things. It just makes it all faster. It makes it all go more quickly.
Well, let's not bury the lead, shall we? The 30th coach of the Indiana University football program is Kurt Cignetti from James Madison University. Kurt has been a head coach for the last 13 years. He got his first head coaching job, I believe, at the age of 49. He's 62 currently. He was a quarterback at West Virginia. His father coached with Bobby Bowden at West Virginia. He sounds like a football lifer, my friend, and, well, he has been. His three head coaching jobs, though, do bring up some interest. Indiana University, Pennsylvania, and Elon College before moving to James Madison. And Mr. Cignetti, Coach Cignetti, has had a very busy day today. He was named the Sun Belt Coach of the Year this morning, and it sounds like he came to terms with Indiana University around lunchtime today. Well, we're getting to know everybody. Where did he rank on your list on Monday when you did, I guess on Monday, that would have been 1.0 before we got to 4.0.
I think I was at 2.0 by Monday. He was not somebody that I thought was kind of seriously in the frame when things opened Sunday. He made sense in one way. You know, there was this sort of, I think a lot of us heard the same information. Indiana wanted head coaching experience, wanted a pretty comprehensive level of experience. This is how I run my program, how I staff, how I recruit, how I develop, how I use the portal, how I identify talent, how I make sure a guy fits me, all that kind of stuff. I think there was a feeling, I mean, two things. One, I think there was a bit of a feeling that he might be slightly outside Indiana's reach because he has been so good at JMU, 52-9 over the last five seasons, obviously won 19 games in just 2 years and at least a share of two Sun Belt titles in 2 years at the FBS level. I also kind of got the sense, because I think a lot of people felt, you know, especially by Sunday, I want to say the Mike Elko thing had already happened or was clearly happening. And, you know, it sort of felt to me like a Syracuse, a Duke, for somebody whose last two stops were in North Carolina and Virginia. Maybe that would make
the states of North Carolina and Virginia,
little bit more sense. I would say probably Monday night, I want to say like Tuesday, is when it started to be one of those where it was a name that wasn't just kind of brought up as a possibility, but it really started to gain traction. And then by yesterday morning, I'm pretty – and you know, I think my best read on this process is that either late Tuesday or Wednesday was kind of decision day in terms of maybe sitting down with the final candidates. I don't know exactly how many there were. Cignetti obviously won. I'm pretty confident Jason Candle at Toledo was another. A lot of buzz around Paul Christ, the former Wisconsin coach. If there were other coaches in that mix, there may have been. But my sense was Tuesday night into Wednesday is kind of when the final round of like, okay, now we're gonna fly to you. We're going to sit down in person. We're going to give you an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. Talk us through everything and you know, really just sort of outline your plan, your vision, your process. And I think from there, it became pretty clear by Wednesday morning, maybe early Wednesday afternoon, that Cignetti had kind of risen above the field.
Is this why the search firm has to be used? Because you just can't be in this many places at that short of a time frame. We're talking about, you know, this is Thursday at noon, this essentially Thursday at 1 when this all happened. So this, you know, Tom on Sunday, there wasn't a lot of hours in the day. It's hard to do by yourself. This is why you get the, besides the plausible deniability, it's really the legwork for the search firm.
Yeah, I mean, it's the legwork. And the other thing I would say, too, is you want to vet these people. You want to go through the background check. You want to, you know, ask, is there anything anybody doesn't know and should and all that stuff? And people who work at search firms have been doing it, in a lot of cases, for years and years, and they've got the contacts. They've obviously got maybe the access to certain things to be able to run certain checks and things like that, but they've also got people that can pick up the phone and say, hey, it's just you and me. There's total anonymity, total privacy here. We're a search firm. This isn't going to find its way into the media.
Yeah, they lose their whole reputation.
Public sphere, right, or whatever. Yeah. You know, talk to me candidly about X coach. And that can, you know, to your point about not being able to be everywhere all at once, you also can't make every call all the time.
Yeah.
And if you bring in somebody who might have a slightly more extensive contact list, then I just think, you know, it just helps smooth the road in a lot of ways. Take some things off the plate of the AD or the president, you know, whoever's kind of heading the search, whatever the search is, not just talking about this one. But it takes, you know, some things that can just kind of be headaches or nuisances or just take up time you may not otherwise have off the plate of the people working the search.
Zach Osterman, Indy Star, in the studio with us live today. Kurt Cignetti, James Madison's head coach, the 2023 Sun Belt Coach of the Year, will be the 30th Indiana University head coach. So you're trying to get this done, what, Sunday night, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday morning. That's not a huge time to do it. Every athletic director will say, this guy was my first choice. No matter who they hire, it always happens that way, unless the Texas A&M situation happens. How concerned, or should we be, not be, or whatever else? The candidates on the list, is that what you expected? Did you think Indiana could have gone another direction? And the reason I bring this up, because Cignetti doesn't really have any regional contact here. He's from Pittsburgh. As you mentioned, he's done a lot of his coaching on the Eastern Seaboard. We've seen coordinator in Kevin Wilson recently. We've seen Franklin College and Terry Heppner. I mean, this could have gone anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, first of all, to the kind of profile of coach, I mean, I do think Indiana talked to some assistants. You know, I think Mike Hart got some time. I think Justin Fry got some time. Now, the thing you can say about a lot of this stuff is, you know, there are different types of interviews. You know, and there's the interview that might be on Zoom or a phone call, a preliminary thing. There's a sit down because, you know, you can just make it happen. And then there's like the, hey, you are a finalist. You have expressed your mutual interest in this job. Sit down and walk me through everything. That's the probably the most intensive one, ultimately. I'm confident in saying there were some coaches that had, let's say, either no head coaching experience or less head coaching experience than some of these guys who I think wound up finalists, like Christ and Cignetti. And listen, you cast a wide net. You don't want to interview anybody and everybody because you only have, again, so many hours in the day. But you cast a wide net because you want to make sure that there's not something you're missing. There's not somebody out there that just, you know, you just look at it and you say, that's the Brad Stevens of football. You know, they're only 33, but they're going to be amazing, and we're going to get in on the ground floor of that. As for you know, regional ties and things. I mean, listen, it's one of those things that can help.
Tom Allen didn't have any.
No, I mean, obviously he's from Indiana, and sure, he'd coached at Ben Davis.
But that was a long
time. And he worked at Wabash. But he had just as, you know, I mean, if you think about the players that made the difference, you know, for Tom Allen's best teams at Indiana, like, a lot of them were not from the Indiana footprint.
Right.
A lot of them were from Florida or Memphis or somewhere else in the South.
Yeah, but Tom Allen was an assistant at Ball State. He wasn't an assistant at Notre Dame. He wasn't Illinois.
Right.
He was from here, but gone from here.
Right. I think there's an extent to which, especially with the portal, you know, good coaches are good coaches. And you know, with the portal, with NIL, you know, I mean, you think about some of the kids in Indiana's taken out of the portal as an example in recent years. Sean Shivers was from Miami. You know, Josh Henderson went to UNC. E.J. Williams is from Alabama. He played at Clemson. You know, and I'm just trying to, you know, Jacob, I mean, two of their better
Texas
defensive
Tech
players, Jacob Mangum Farrar and Nick Toomer, both went to Stanford. So, you know, you have to kind of, that can always be a plus. It shouldn't be the only reason you hire somebody. I don't like coaching hires where I think of, like, in this basketball, like Ben Johnson at Minnesota, where it's like, well, they're bringing him in because they think he can go get all this homegrown Minneapolis talent. And it's like, well, get the right coach, and the right coach will build those recruiting pipelines because good players will want to play for them rather than the other way around. Don't get somebody just because they've got some sort of established track record. And you can always also go find assistant coaches. You know, I mean, Kevin Wilson recruited Cincinnati a lot. And I think a lot of people perceive that it was from Kevin's time with Randy Walker at Miami of Ohio. Greg Fry was huge with that. And Greg Fry was, you know, he played at Florida State. I think obviously had some time in the Midwest at Michigan. But he just had a lot of connections in Cincinnati. And so that, you know, not necessarily like Greg Fry was just dominating Cincinnati recruiting, but the point is sometimes all you need is one coach that's got the relationships in a place to open some doors for you. And then
you don't have to be omniscient. You don't have to be.
And then again, a good coach will attract recruits. Players will want to play for a good coach. And they won't want to play for somebody who doesn't do anything except land flashy recruits and then not develop them.
Well, you get Sports Illustrated Sportsman of the Year if you do that. Zach Osterman is our guest. Kurt Cignetti is the new coach. 13 seasons as a head coach, 13 winning seasons as well. Well, we'd like that streak to continue here in Bloomington. When will we see him in Bloomington? We'll talk about that later once we get all the official details of whenever that pops out, unless you have something you want to throw in there. I'm not going to put you on the spot. I don't know how that's going to work. My guess was, hey, look, there's a football game tomorrow night. There's going to be assembled media in town. That would be a logical time. But he is going to coach the bowl game for James Madison. That is correct?
Yes, he is.
So that means what? Is there anything to read into that or worry about that? Let's wrap up the James Madison before we get to what's he going to do at Indiana. He's been there for 5 years. He's transitioned them from the, oh, geez, here we go with the alphabet soup, the Football Championship Series, FCS, now into the FBS. So he played at the high, he coached at the highest level for just 2 years. Do I have that right?
Correct.
Yes. Last year and the year before that. Does that make anybody squirm a little bit? Indiana, Pennsylvania is not a football powerhouse. Elon's not a football powerhouse. James Madison is. The coach that was there before, Cignetti, had an unbelievable record as well, and a big one with not a lot of losses into it. I don't want to be devil's advocate here, but to a degree, this is not a lot of experience when you talk about throwing in Oregon, Washington, USC, and UCLA into an 18-team Big Ten.
Yeah, no, I think that's I think that's fair. I mean,
it's interesting, if anything.
Well, I mean, and listen, the first thing is there's 13 seasons and 13 winning seasons. Whatever the level, you can't argue with just
the
baseline of that. I think if you're looking for comparisons, I mean, that Elon job is not an easy one. It's a smaller school.
2 years there, right?
It's in a tough conference. It's obviously changed a little bit in the last few years. But just to give people a sense, like Elon, you know, back when a lot of these teams were still in the FCS, was playing with James Madison, with Georgia Southern, with
8-4, 6-5
State, Furman, like teams that were competing for national titles at the FCS level. It's if I'm not mistaken, it's got some pretty rigorous academics. It's not the biggest school in the world. Anyway, the point is, it's not an easy job. And he steps in there and he wins, you know, 2 years in a row, he winning seasons, top 25 finishes, playoff appearances, because down there they do like a tournament. They do like a championship tournament. And then, you know, kind of amusingly, his second season, he goes on the road and upsets the number two team in the country in at the FCS level, and so that team hires him in the offseason.
That was James Madison, right?
Got to James Madison. So the point is, he's been at places where he had to punch up a little bit.
Mike Houston at James Madison before Cignetti got there was 37-6.
There you go. I mean, it's
the coach before him was 19-7, and the coach before that was 109-71. That's a winning football program.
It is. And so you've got a little bit of experience of both. You've got experience of a place where there's some expectation, where there's some, you know, there's some legitimate sort of like, hey, you know, this is something that can be done at a level that, not everybody can, or whatever you want to say. But then he's also, again, got some experience where he's had to go in and be the underdog, not be, you know, not feel like, okay, we're one of the most, you know, resource talented programs in the country at our level. Be in a place where he's got to figure out how to be creative, to be competitive, and he's done that too.
Zach Osterman, Indianapolis Star. We will meet Kurt Cignetti tomorrow, the media, at 2:30 at the team room. That is now out there and about there. So there we go. That's when you will hear from him. So I thought we'd do it before the basketball game. That's not going to be the case. Well, why? Now, he's got things to do, and we'll get into those here momentarily after we take a quick timeout. But Kurt Cignetti, the new head coach, 62 years of age. Did the number, does the age, does that bother? Is that something we should even consider? Is that something that's even relevant?
I don't think so anymore.
Okay.
I mean, you know, obviously, I mean, listen, I think he told Pat McAfee or somebody at one point this
season.
I'm going
to coach to 75.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, I don't think he's slowing down, I guess, is my point. I don't think this is a, you know, by any means, I don't think this is a somebody who's looking to power down to go to, you know, a retirement, something like that. I mean, you know, I think about, like, Heppner was, I want to say, in his late 50s when Indiana hired him, and he was as energetic as
absolutely,
you know, anybody we've seen in that job in a long time, and that's with no disrespect to some others, but the point is, I think that's much more the personality of the coach anymore, the coach's ambitions, the coach's desires, and just how they're going to approach the job.
Zach Osterman, Indy Star, 30th head coach of Indiana football, will be introduced tomorrow. Kurt Cignetti, we will talk about the James Madison, Sun Belt Coach of the Year. We will talk about what the expectations will be at Indiana University. You haven't heard anything about salary yet or anything. Is that
been trying to figure that out and have not heard anything concrete on salary or staffing.
That was going to be my next question.
Which I think is another one of those things that a coach is going to want to move fairly quickly through.
Excellent. We'll hear more about it with Zach Osterman. We might even squeeze in a little hoop if we can get to that as well. The Crazy Horse Tavern Happy Hour, the final Thursday of November. Well, that means if it's Thursday night, David Hayes will follow us at 6. We will have NFL football tonight, Seattle and Dallas from Arlington at the AT&T Cowboys Stadium there. Seattle, Dallas, 7:30 for an 8:15 kick. The Pacers tonight are in Miami for the first of two games over three nights against the Heat. We'll have Saturday night's game for you. Mackenzie Holmes, homecoming. Maine, Indiana, ESPN Plus at 7 p.m. The Indiana men's basketball season opens tomorrow. The Big Ten basketball season. Maryland is in town, and we'll have high school hoops for you on the airwaves on Friday night. North is at Center Grove, our second high school broadcast of the game. Colts and Titans from Nash Vegas on Sunday. Yeah, we got plenty of things to do. More with Zach Osterman after Diane Daly's news headlines. The Crazy Horse Tavern Happy Hour continues next. All right, welcome back. The Crazy Horse Tavern Happy Hour here on a Thursday. Zach Osterman live in the studio. He's been a busy, busy man all week long. Number one, I got to do two things. First of all, excellent job. Well, I'm not surprised. I talked about this on the show yesterday. That's why we have you on, because you're in your field. You're incredibly talented, and we thank you for sharing that information with us here on WGCL. Number two, you've also been nominated by whom to be the Sports Writer of the Year in Indiana? Who is that? Who's handing out those nominations?
I'll be honest, I don't know.
You don't know. Look at this.
I saw that and I was like, oh well, I didn't know that. I appreciate it. It's an honor to be nominated, but I was unaware of that.
So. You and Dustin Dupirak, two of our regular guests on this program, nominated for
as long as I finish in front of Ned and Reap. I mean, that's all I care
that's
about.
That's how you say his name? Okay. And Holder's on there. You got all the The whole crew's here.
I mean, it feels a little bit like that time Jamie Carragher was on one of my favorite Liverpool podcasts, and they were debating if he would have gotten in the teams these days. He's like, I would have gotten ahead of Lovren. Come on.
I just thought Don Fisher wins all the media awards. It doesn't matter what category they are.
Probably.
And of course, he's up for Broadcaster of the Year again, as well. We're talking Indiana football. Kurt Cignetti is the new head coach. He was announced officially this afternoon. It was broken earlier today. How does that work? You've been on the story the whole thing, and then Pete Thamel swoops in and does.
Well, listen.
Give our listeners an insight of how your game works on that.
Yeah,
side.
You have to remember, like, these hires. A school's not going to want to confirm anything until everything is buttoned up, because they want to make sure
you don't want to be Greg Schiano at Tennessee.
Yeah, you don't want to scare the coach away. You don't want to anger anybody. Maybe he wants it handled a certain way. Oh well, he's going to stay and coach the JMU bowl game, so he doesn't want this to be out until this time or whatever. I don't know, but agents and people in representation and coaches. They talk all the time. And so when it comes from that direction, it's usually a little bit kind of more, I don't say laid back, but a little bit less formal kind of, conversation than what a university is going to engage in. Because, again, it is trying to dot all the I's, cross all the T's, make sure that everything is buttoned up before it says things publicly. And so that's why sometimes this stuff does go through the national guys. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, your sources are your sources. As long as they're reliable, as long as you treat them right, as long as you're being ethically sound, there's absolutely nothing wrong with who gets information and how and when. Good reporters are good reporters. But that's why sometimes this stuff, drifts out in that direction.
Well, it is out there now. We have not heard any contract details. Should that be of any concern to any fan paying attention to this? We're going to get into the football folks here in 10 seconds because you have a one-word answer.
I think what you're going to be more concerned about is staffing.
Okay.
Pool. And obviously NIL to some extent. There's been a big push even just today from Hoosiers Connect around.
That press release, right?
Which is half of the business half of the IU partner collective, the official partner collective, sort of pushing.
Would you
not just NIL, but
the proud,
the new coach,
yeah.
Football. We're going to get behind him. He's all in. Are you? That kind of thing.
6 years, 7 years. What's it going right?
Probably about 6 years. I would say probably seven.
Okay.
That'd be my guess. If I was guessing the median salary in the Big Ten. Last year, Brett Bielema made 6.5. He was seventh. Fleck made 6. He was 8th. So I think that's probably the neighborhood you're shopping in. It's a substantial raise on Tom Allen. But again, I think what a coach is going to be more interested in is, where's my NIL at and where's my staffing pool at?
That's interesting. You bring up NIL. How much NIL goes on at James Madison, and what kind of background will he have?
I'm sure there's something. I mean, I'm sure there is.
Coastal Carolina shut theirs down today. Did you see that?
No, I didn't. Interesting.
They pulled the plug on it.
I'm sure there is something, is the short answer. The long answer is, I think, programs have started to take more creative approaches to this stuff. Some programs have even gone so far as to name someone a quote-unquote general manager. And that person is there to, do a lot of sort of the legwork in terms of like building out sort of scouting pools, and here's what we're looking for, and I'm going to be somebody who evaluates a lot of talent and recommends certain recruits and different things, and I would imagine that if those people have the right background, you can also maybe put them in charge of making sure that you're kind of keeping your NIL resources marshaled well. You're keeping track of, these are the guys that are on it, and maybe you're trying to get some intel and say what are some like similar numbers for similar players at other schools, because that's the one big problem with this is nobody's really sure. I mean, I've talked to over the last few months.
Matt Rhule is out there spouting out.
Yeah, well,
he's not even in the ballpark, is he?
Matt Rhule also needs to chill it with the Normandy quotes, but
that's a good point.
Listen. I'm sure there are seven-figure quarterbacks in college football.
Two of them?
I'm probably more than that, but I how many teams make the bowl field? 70 or so now?
Mm-hmm.
I'm confident we're not talking like 25 having million-dollar quarterbacks.
You're more looking at the college football playoff field.
Yeah, that's the
Heisman Trophy.
That level of competitiveness. Yeah. The conversations I've had, and this is, again, not even necessarily related to the search, just having these conversations with people in the industry, people on the collective side, people who work in fundraising and development at different universities. This is, I mean, it's not even specific just to Indiana. It's just kind of like asking and just getting people's opinions or people's read. And the market is, it is a dark market. It is vague. It's very sort of awkward in the way that it moves and everything. Nobody is sure, but my perception is a program at the level that Indiana wants to be at, $3 million, which is the baseline for where Indiana is going to be in NIL, per my understanding through some sources, going forward for Kurt Cignetti, $3 million is a very good baseline. If you want to be competitive, if you want to be a bowl team, if you want to be able to retain, you know, a lot of your talent, not everybody all the time, and you know, you have to make sure you're spending it wisely, but $3 to $3.5 million seems like basically a number to be a good competitive Power Four program. Obviously, that's not the Alabamas, the Ohio States, the Penn States. You know, at that level, it's a little different. And in the SEC, it's also a little different. But, like, listen, there are SEC schools that have struggled to figure out NIL. I think Mississippi State is one of them. I just think you're going to see a real sort of redoubled effort from Indiana to say this is a way that we can flatten this competitive curve a little bit with NIL. And I think they were – you know, I think Tom Allen obviously released that statement. He said, you know, that Indiana needs to kind of get, you know, modernize or be comfortable with the future. I think there was some truth in that. I suspect maybe that was more true 2 years ago than it was last year and certainly than it is right now. I do think that there are ways in which Indiana took some time to gear up kind of that whole apparatus, but I don't necessarily think that it was, you know, something that Indiana just woke up on like October 1st, 2023 and said, oh man, we got to figure this out.
Cignetti had an interesting quote, and I know you read it earlier. I'm excited to lead this program forward and change the culture, mindset, and expectation level of Hoosier football. I found that interesting.
I mean, it just kind of sounds like everything that...
Boilerplate?
Yeah, I mean, how many coaches talk about changing the culture? Obviously, mindset. I mean, again, listen, the thing this guy can walk in and talk about is he can just say, I've won everywhere I've been.
How does that translate into re-recruiting the 20 or so Indiana players that are in the portal?
I think that's just such a one-to-one thing.
Okay.
Some of those guys, because I've said this week.
The listeners would say, do we have a chance of bringing any of those players back?
Probably.
Does NIL?
Especially if you are able to put maybe some more lucrative NIL deals in front of some of them. I do believe this. I think Tom Allen, maybe more than the average, had a lot of guys that bought into him personally. His approach. You know, just the relationships he had with his players, the one-to-one interaction, the time he made for them and everything. I wouldn't be surprised if there are a few more players than the average who say, essentially, you know.
That's not my coach.
I was really here more for Coach Allen than anything else. But at the same time, you know, money calms a lot of nerves.
Well, it solves a lot of problems.
And if
it creates a few, too.
If you put the right sort of opportunity in front of the right player, who knows?
Okay, so let's take that opportunity back to the gridiron. People want to know why Cignetti has been successful. Do we have that answer? Is it simply as, oh, just watch the film and look how it goes? Is he a disciplinarian? Has he been great in the transfer market? Has he brought guys, is he taking guys off other rosters and put them onto these James Madison teams? Are these high school kids? I know it's a ton of questions, and I know you haven't spent your last 3 days doing all of this, but what do we know about Cignetti and football?
I think there's a couple things I would say. First of all, I mean, there is a track record of offensive success. We were talking about this off air, but if I'm not mistaken, every one of his starting quarterbacks during his 5 years at James Madison have won Offensive Player of the Year in their conference at least once. So there is a track record. I think there's a little bit of power element to his offense, but there is a track record of his offense being a real staple of his teams, scoring a lot of yards, a lot of points. Again, his background is in offense. He played quarterback. He was all, you know, everywhere he went, he was an offensive assistant. His teams have always scored the ball well. I do think it's also interesting.
Only place he was not quarterback was Alabama.
Wide receivers. And he would have worked with like Julio Jones. I think Tyrone Profro was there around that time.
Name dropper.
The The other thing that I think is interesting is he's won at places that had a variety of challenges. So he's won at the D2 level, where it's not like you're just throwing around scholarship money everywhere you go. He's won at a tough and, I think, fairly academically rigorous Elon program that, if I'm not mistaken, their head coach and at least one of their assistants, basically he left behind. So when he left, they basically said, why don't we try to keep what he had here, even if he's gone? Let's try to capture as much of that as we can, even as he's headed out the door. Let's bring some of these guys that were with him here. Let's keep him here. Then he was at James Madison, which was a big dog in the FCS. And then he brought him up to the FBS, and suddenly it was, okay, well, you know, you were really good down there. You were the top of the pile in the division below. How are you going to stack up here? And he's won everywhere. And the challenges in building and maintaining your roster at each of those stops is going to be different from pretty much all the others. And he has met that challenge successfully everywhere he's been.
Winning here has been very difficult. You had Kevin Wilson come from top of the line, Oklahoma national contender annually. You had Tom Allen in two great seasons. I can't say good. They're great seasons here. Why is this one going to be different?
I mean, I'm not going to sit here and promise that it will, you know, in the sense that I'm
right. But listeners, I'm here, past 13 straight winning seasons.
Yeah.
You got to take a little bit of a deep breath.
I think.
Right?
I mean, yeah.
Eight home games is encouraging.
Yeah, I mean, eight home games next year is a big deal.
Louisville's not on the schedule.
Because momentum is everything when you talk about, you know, I mean, listen, I'm not trying to be harsh on anybody, but just to use this as kind of an example, you know, Tom Allen sort of made some of these backhanded comments about NIL, and then he made one pretty pointedly when he was dismissed. NIL is like anything else. You got to fundraise for it. If you're winning, that's a lot easier than if you're losing.
Amen.
You know, and it's just, it's kind of one of those things where it can be a little bit chicken and egg, where you say, well, the coach needs more NIL support so he can go out and get some of these really good players and then keep them, and he can be more aggressive in the portal, and he doesn't have to worry so much about his guys getting picked off and A.J. Barner going to Michigan or you know, Desaun McCullough
holding
going
penalty to Oklahoma, fumble.
Yada, yada, yada. The flip side is, it's a lot easier to, and I'm pretty confident in saying Indiana has seen some real momentum around NIL fundraising, because it's, okay, but this is a new direction. There's no pent-up frustration with this coach and what he can't do and what he isn't and what people don't believe in him or what people believe is bad about him. So it's a little bit kind of one of those things where, you know, I heard Tom Allen's, I thought at least pretty polite, but I think it's still fair to call them criticisms. And it's sort of like, yeah, he's probably got a point. Also, you know, his teams were 3-24 in their last three Big Ten seasons. You know, sometimes the winning is, it's a lot easier to get money to follow winning than it is to get winning to follow money.
And each year that the 3-24 happened was one year that 8-5 and 6-2 was in the rearview mirror.
And
that's
so
part of it as well.
When you ask like why it'll work in Indiana, he does just have a winning formula. I don't think that's unfair to say. We can't necessarily overlay it against a Big Ten schedule and say, well, because I mean, he didn't even really play. I want to say he went like 1-2 in his time at James Madison against FBS opponents. They beat Virginia this year. But the point is, it's not like, you know, like coaches at like MAC schools play a couple FBS or Power 4 teams a year. James Madison wasn't playing a ton of those games. They beat UConn. I think they might have beat South Florida somewhere in there. Those are sort of almost like Power 4 adjacent games anymore.
And Virginia's not any good, let's be fair.
No, they're not. But you beat an ACC school in an ACC stadium.
That counts.
It
does count.
The point is, we can't just overlay his career thus far and say, this is what it will be and this is how it will work. What we can do is say he's got a track record of success. He's seen it up close as a head coach. He's also been some places that were pretty good had some success, particularly success he was involved in at places like NC State and Alabama. So he knows what a Power Four program looks like, broadly speaking. He's been around for a long time, so he's probably got plenty of people he can call anytime he runs into a question he doesn't know the answer to. And Indiana is trying very, very hard to give him the NIL resources to compete. You would feel like Indiana's probably in as good of a position to succeed as it's been in a long time.
Zach Osterman, Indy Star, joining us at Zach Osterman on the X Twitter. Of course, support your local journalism, kids. All right, staffing questions. We're just not going to copy and paste the James Madison staff. There's a couple Indiana guys, or well, former guys from Tom Allen's staff, or at least one from Tom Allen. Pat Kuntz was on
the staff. Yeah, Pat Kuntz was a GA under Allen. Bryant Haynes, who is JMU's defensive coordinator and was a Broyles Award semifinalist this year, was a GA under Wilson.
That was 2012, right?
Yeah, somewhere. It was. I mean, I don't remember exactly when it was. But he's one that, you know, we'll find out about staffing. I suspect some things will move.
So the offense is through the head coach, essentially.
I would assume.
For generalities.
Yeah.
He's quarterback coach.
Right.
We can kind of – he's the offensive guy. Defensive guy is going to be – so are we transitioning out of the defensive world?
If he's a 13-year head coach, my suspicion is he's not looking at it the way that sometimes, you know, it always felt like Kevin Wilson would just sort of say, I'll do the offense, you do the defense.
Right.
The way Tom Allen would say, I'll do the defense, you do the offense.
So this is more of a CEO?
I would suspect there will be more of an element of that because of how old he is and how much experience he has.
With all of that, what is his list of offensive coordinator look like then? Is that the exciting part of this?
I don't know. I mean, we'll learn
tomorrow, obviously.
Yeah, I think we will learn in pretty short order. The other question I'd have is, you know, I think he'll probably want to bring some of his guys with him.
How does that usually work?
It's
a carte blanche, right?
There's no gentleman's agreement. You're not going to hire guys.
So Dolson hires him and he says, hey, I want to bring my whole whatever. And Dolson says, no, we already have people here for this, this, or this. What is movable and not movable?
All stuff that'll get negotiated.
Okay. Like strength and conditioning. We've seen those guys leave before. Is that staff done or do you?
There will be some turnover. Okay. I wouldn't be surprised if he wanted
to, for
example, you know, talk to Bob Bostad about sticking around offensive line coach. But then again, you know, you talk about someone like Bryant Haynes. Well, that would make a lot of sense. He was a Broyles Award winner or Broyles Award semifinalist. Broyles Award is given to the top assistant coach in the FBS every year. He was a Broyles Award semifinalist as a defensive coordinator of a really, really good Sun Belt team. It's pretty clear that he should get a Power Four opportunity in the not very distant future. The one question I'd have, you know, his offensive coordinator is a guy named Mike Shanahan, who I don't think is related to those Shanahans. But, you know, this has happened before at stops Cignetti's had. What if JMU wants to bring one of those guys in as head coach? So then suddenly it's not like, well, we can't, you know, can't have the continuity because
somebody's got to stay behind.
Yeah, this guy's actually going to go do the head job now. So I don't know. The answer is I don't know exactly where that's going to go. I suspect it will be a bit of a blend of, you know, coaches he might bring with him and coaches he'll either retain or hire from just outside that Harrisonburg to Bloomington pipeline. But I think that
that's just funny to hear out loud.
But I think there is a I think there's also an extent to which, what is the best way to put this? I think there's also an extent to which you have to wait and see what happens with some of these guys. This JMU want to bring them back? What if Bryant Haynes gets an even bigger defensive coordinator? You know, what if he's offered the DC position at Alabama? Well, then I doubt Kurt Cignetti is going to fault him for saying no to Indiana because it's a different kind of career opportunity. He's coming from a winning program. It's a winning program because he was the head coach. But when you look at some of the coaches he's left behind and the extent to which, as I said earlier, those programs have almost, it seems like to the outward eye anyway, it seems like those programs have almost said, we want more of what he was doing. You know, we liked what he was doing. We want more of that. That being the case, I think you kind of have to wait and see. Like, again, does JMU try to keep somebody around as head coach? Are there other big programs? JMU just went 19-4 across its first two seasons in the football bowl subdivision. I suspect there are going to be some other Power Four programs that might say, we'd like a little bit of that, please. We'd like to know what that We'd like to know what's going on there.
We'd like to know what's in that recipe book. Absolutely. Zach Osterman, Indy Star. 1 minute to go, my friend, before we got to let you get back to work. You have the first question at the press conference tomorrow. What are you going to ask Mr. Cignetti? Have you thought that deeply about it yet, or is that just something you show up and go with?
No, I think – I mean, I haven't thought that deeply about it. I suspect I would say you had a really successful, you know, sort of thing going at James Madison. You know, what made this specifically the Power Four job that it was worth leaving that behind to go to? Because that James Madison clearly is going to be, in the same way that Jamie Chadwell's in no hurry to leave Liberty, because Liberty is always going to be one of the most moneyed programs in its conference. You're going to have the opportunity to win titles, 10-win seasons. You can make yourself a candidate basically every offseason until the right job comes along. James Madison looks like it's going to be similar based on their success early in their FBS tenure. Why was this the job to leave that behind?